Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, my website at albertmohler.com, I posted an article on the new religion of green. It's a very interesting development, and it's been noted for some time that environmentalism has become the religion, especially radical environmentalism, the deep ecology movement. Even just the whole emphasis of green has become a substitute religion in a secular age. Very interesting article was published at the Chronicle of Higher Education this week. Stephen T. Asma, professor of philosophy at Columbia College in Chicago, argues that the new religion of many secular folk is ecology. And he really writes a fascinating article because he walks through saying this new religion of green has its own doctrine of sin, its own green guilt. He goes back to Friedrich Nietzsche. At the end of the 19th century, Nietzsche declared that God is dead, but he said the religious passions and emotions remain, including guilt and shame. And so secular folk, even in a post-Christian age, try to come up with ways to deal with that. And environmentalism has become the religion of many. This is a very interesting article. You'll notice my article on this at albertmohler.com entitled Thinking Green, the New Religion. Now, we're not in this particular conversation even just looking at the whole question of Christian environmentalism and the rest. We're looking at the way that in a secular society, people are not as secular as they think they are. And that's what's really interesting here. These folks think they are absolutely secular. They think they are post-Christian, post-theistic. They're agnostic. Many of them consider themselves just non-believers of any traditional sort. But in this secular age, you're going to believe in something. And you got to believe in something, as the song goes, and that's exactly right. And there's a good Christian, biblical, theological explanation for this. We'll be talking about that when we come back to this topic in just a moment. But the reality is that God made us in his image, and that means that God made us religious creatures. And by that, I don't mean all the stuff that's freighted in the world religion. What I mean is God made us as creatures who know that we are known. We know intuitively that we did not make ourselves, and that the world has meaning, and that there is a God. That's the most amazing thing. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. There is a knowledge implanted in us. And what you have in the religions of the world, not to mention all the multitudinous idolatries, is a way that human beings try to come up with creatively to satisfy that need. That's what makes biblical Christianity distinctively different, because after all, the gospel is not about what we do, but what Christ has done for us and allowing us first and foremost to know the one true and living God. But what you have here is a reminder that even the people who think themselves secular just aren't as secular as they think they are. As a matter of fact, atheists tend to make a religion of their atheism. It just happens that way, and it's not a coincidence. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll look forward to that conversation in just a moment. In the meantime, you've got time to go look at that article and take a look at the article also by Professor Asma. You'll find them both interesting. Speaking of interesting, wasn't yesterday's show interesting? The interview we had with Professor William Struthers of Wheaton College on how pornography hijacks the male brain. Interesting mail I've received in the aftermath of that conversation. Lots of folks have written me with appreciation both for the show, the program, and the specific material coming from Professor Struthers. I want to recommend again his book, Wired for Intimacy, How Pornography Hijacks the Male Brain. Interesting questions that have come up. Several people have written me to say, you know, just how big a problem is this? Well, let me just state this as straightforwardly as I can. You should assume that this is a huge problem for any male. Just to say, if any male has unrestricted access, has unmonitored habits of engaging with the internet and the media, you can just know that something you would probably define as pornography is going to be a very strong matter of seduction. Now, you say that's a very dark view of human existence. Listen, it's not only a dark view of human nature. I'll tell you, it's a biblical view that tells us that you add opportunity to the existence of a sinner, and you just have to expect that bad things are going to happen. And for that, just the moral risk involved tells us that we need to be putting all the structures of accountability in place. And that means, for example, again, you know, parents, don't let your teenagers, your children have unrestricted access to the internet. put the computer that is internet accessible, not in the kid's bedroom by any stretch of the imagination, put it in the kitchen. While mom's cutting carrots on the counter, it's unlikely Junior's going to be looking at porn, on the other side of the counter. Also, make sure that you avail yourself of the technological advantages of certain technologies, monitoring programs, and all the rest. And when it comes to accountability, we need to make sure that this is something we are talking about. That's why I did the program yesterday. That's why I'm so thankful that Professor Struthers wrote the book. One of the worst things we could do is just not talk about this. We need to be talking about it. We need to put it up right front and center, honestly, as a major challenge. There are an awful lot of Christians and perhaps even evangelical churches and Christian leaders who say, you know, I know somebody has a problem with this, but certainly no one in my church. Well, wake up. That is simply not the reality. And we just, in making a statement like that, forget who we're dealing with here. Homo sapiens, fallen humanity, and even those who have been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, well, we're those who do take sin so seriously that we'd better know we need protections in our lives to prevent us falling into these specific sins. The very interesting contribution of Professor Struthers, not perhaps unique, the data is out there, but he assimilates it in a very, very helpful way, is to show why it is that males in particular are susceptible to pornography. And I just want to remind you who are women out there that that males are very susceptible to pornography. They are accountable for that. But women sometimes, commit pornography. Just remember that part of the equation as well. There is moral accountability all around. Speaking of moral accountability, big stuff going on in the news in California. There in the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals, there is one of the biggest cases, I think, that will be remembered in probably American history. David Boies and Theodore Olson joining together. Those are the two lead attorneys you may remember in the Bush v. Gore case that goes all the way back to the election in 2000. Now they are joining together to present the case arguing that California's Proposition 8 is unconstitutional in preventing homosexual couples from marrying. A lot of attention to this. Huge debates going on that may surprise you, such as the judge's ruling that the proceedings would be streamed live on video. Never, by the way, has this taken place in the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals, and will be available on YouTube. Now, that leads to a very, very interesting assessment. By any measure, the judge in this case has really produced a long series of a long list of rulings that have made the defense in this case, that is the pro heterosexual marriage, pro-Proposition 8 case, on the defensive. Edwin Meese, former Attorney General of the United States, writing in the New York Times yesterday, makes this very clear, suggesting that opponents of same-sex marriage are being unfairly burdened in the court. A lot of this is becoming very dramatic. The United States Supreme Court has intervened, at least temporarily, in the plans to do the live streaming of this case as it's being heard in San Francisco. We'll be watching to see how that turns out. Very interesting article. I was in Cleveland over the weekend preaching at Cuyahoga Valley Church, also speaking to a pastor's luncheon there, and launching a special educational program, an extension campus for Southern Seminary, which I'm president. We were there having a great time. Let me tell you, it was a cold and wonderful experience. It was like a winter wonderland for someone who grew up in Florida, being up there in Cleveland in the first full week of January. But let me tell you, I found something very interesting there in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the venerable newspaper there of Ohio's great city on Lake Erie. It says this, Bill Livingston writing commentary in sports, a commentary entitled, "Here's the Moral of Tiger's Sad Tale." He says something very, very interesting. And coming from a secular perspective, this has a lot of insight because it tells you that sports writers, among others, knew there were problems long ago. Bill Livingston writes that we never really did know Tiger. He said, speaking of his image, it's an image that would have been unsuited. Speaking of the very marketed persona of Tiger Woods for all these years, it was an image that was marketed but not real. He points out that by the time, not only did you have the scandals leaking, but also the Annie Leibovitz photograph on the front of Vanity Fair magazine, prison yard Tiger, by the way, being the words. He says it's an image that would have been unsuited to the controlling nature of pre-Thanksgiving Tiger. It seems to fit what fans have learned of Woods in the aftermath of his car accident on Thanksgiving night. His life has become a tabloid-orama, featuring the wronged wife wielding a golf club on his car and possibly on him, and alleged mistresses popping up faster than Woods could plead with him to cover it all up. Now, the interesting thing made by Bill Livingston is the fact that Well, sports writers, among others, were in a position to know there were probably problems there, that this was a cultivated and not a real image. But the most important thing in this article is that Mr. Livingston points out that it's wrong to focus on sports heroes for the heroes of the young. He says this: real life trumps fantasy. The backyard, not the prison yard, is where the role models are. He says this: he salutes parents and teachers, coaches and mentors who relay the sensible, grounded, ordinary lessons that make for decency. In other words, looking at Tiger Woods is a reminder that he had a very unnatural life, a very unnatural childhood, a life directed towards golf is the most important thing of all. And now it turns out that it's not very late in life to find that out. We're going to be back to talk about environmentalism as the new religion, the religion of green, on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Very interesting article in the Chronicle of Higher Education. Stephen Asma, professor at Columbia College Chicago, tells about his six-year-old coming up to him as he has the water running in the sink. And his six-year-old is scandalized by this. And as he speaks to his father, he says, "Don't you love the earth?" The six-year-old son scalded the father. According to Professor Asma, lately the boy is taking up the energy cause, scampering virtuously around the house, turning off lights even while I'm using them. He seems as stressed and anxious about the sins of environmentalism as Stephen Asma says he was about some of the sins of his own youth. And very clearly what he's talking about here is the fact that there is a new sense of guilt, a new sense of shame. There's a new religion here, and it turns out that it's a green religion with a whole new set of sins. Now, what makes this particularly interesting is not just what this says about the environmental movement, that's important too, but what it says about humanity. Because Stephen Asma is writing not as a believing Christian, he identifies himself, as I understand it, as a Buddhist, but he's writing about secular Americans and the fact that they're far more religious than they think they are. And he cites a very good authority on this, and that is Friedrich Nietzsche. Those of you who know the history of philosophy know that at the end of the 19th century, Friedrich Nietzsche, the German philosopher, was the nihilist, the one who denied all meaning, who declared that God is dead and that we have killed him. He declared the death of God in the modern age. And yet, the philosopher said the religious emotions remain. He said even after belief in God is evaporating, you know, it didn't evaporate, as we should make clear. God is not dead, nor is belief in him. Nonetheless, in the modern age, we do have certainly the rise of the intellectual elites who consider themselves secular. They don't need God anymore. They don't believe in God anymore. But as Stephen Asma and Nietzsche pointed out, they still act religious all the same. They just don't act in ways that are distinctively Christian. Instead, they have their own new secular religions, complete with secular redemption, secular guilt, secular worship, secular authority, secular priests, and all the rest. It turns out that the modern age did not destroy religion so defined. Peter Berger, Boston University, was one of those sociologists who back at the midpoint, say, of the 20th century, was arguing that the modern age meant the end of faith. And as it turns out, it didn't work that way. You look at most of the conflicts in the world today, there's a theological dimension to it, a religious dimension to it. It turns out that the resurgent energy in the world right now is not of secularism, but it's of some kind of religious belief, whether it be Islamic or Christian or Pentecostal, defining much of Latin America. It's something going on somewhere. Just look at the headlines about what's going on in strife right now between Christians and Muslims in Malaysia. This is an ongoing story on the headline of virtually every issue of the paper in one way or the other. This may be a very confused age, but it is not a secular age. Now, by the way, Peter Berger came back to redefine in a very humble way. He came back to say, you know what we were wrong. The world turns out not to be, in its modern phase, secular. He says, with two exceptions, Western Europe and the intellectual elites in America. And he says, it turns out that if you are in, say, Belgium or Cambridge, Massachusetts, you're likely to find a pretty high degree of secularism. But amongst most people in most places, it's anything but. Now, Stephen Asma is writing this article. And again, he doesn't have a Christian agenda here, But he does understand that many secular people simply have their own secular religion. They suffer from their own secular guilt. He entitled his article Green Guilt. He writes this. Just listen to what he has to say. Now, the secular world still has to make sense out of its own invisible psychological drama, in particular its feelings of guilt and indignation. Environmentalism as a substitute for religion has come to the rescue. Nietzsche's argument about an ideal God and guilt can be replicated in a new form. We need a belief in a pristine environment because we need to be cruel to ourselves as inferior beings, and we need that because we have these aggressive instincts that cannot be let out. End quote. Oh, that's a bunch of psychology there thrown in with the philosophy, but I think you get the point. His argument is that secular people are nowhere nearly as secular as they think themselves, and that comes out because even though they reject Christianity, they may reject Judaism if that's their background. What they come out with is a new secular religion complete with its own new guilt. Now, these religious emotions that seem to be so continuous in human experience, including guilt, explain why so many people seek relief by therapy or treatment. Therapy replaces theology, the analyst replaces the minister, psychotropic drugs become the sacraments, and confessing one's misdeeds on Oprah becomes the substitute for the confession of sin. Now, when you start looking at what's going on with environmentalism, at least with radical environmentalism or deep ecology, you see all the fundamental facets of what would be defined as religion. This is what he has to say. Again, back to Stephen Asman's article, he says this: instead of religious sins plaguing our conscience, we now have the transgressions of leaving water running, leaving the lights on, failing to recycle, and using plastic grocery bags instead of paper. In addition, the righteous pleasures of being more orthodox than your neighbor, in this case being more green, can still be had. The new heresies include failure to compost or refusal to go organic. Vitriol that used to be reserved for Satan can now be discharged against evil corporate chief executives and the drivers of gas-guzzling vehicles. Apocalyptic fear-mongering previously took the shape of repent or burn in hell, but now it's recycle or burn in the ozone hole. In fact, it is interesting the way environmentalism takes on the apocalyptic aspects of the traditional religious narrative. The idea that the end is nigh is quite central to traditional Christianity. It is a jolting wake-up call to get on the righteous path. And we find many environmentalists in a similarly earnest panic about climate change and global warming. End quote. You know, that is a spectacularly well-crafted paragraph. Now, Professor Asma really puts it on the line right there, and that's exactly what's going on. Instead of people wanting to be holy, they want to be green. Instead of fear of Satan, they direct their anger at corporate chief executives. Their sins are leaving the lights on, leaving the water running, failing to recycle, and using plastic grocery bags instead of paper. Now, let me tell you what we're not doing here today. I'm not bashing environmentalists. Anything we can learn about how we can improve the stewardship of the earth is a good thing. But we are bashing environmentalism as a religion, at least suggesting that it falls far short of what it should be. It aims too high. And again, in a secular age, you have people who think they don't believe in God, but they believe in something. And by the way, some of these on the most radical wing of environmentalism have even wedded it to a New Age spirituality with the Gaia hypothesis, suggesting that, you know, the universe is itself a living personality. You've got some strange stuff going on here, but the picture of this six-year-old boy going up to this professor and suggesting that he's sinning by running the water. I love the picture of the little six-year-old running around turning out the lights in the house even when dad's using him. Well, let me tell you, that tells you a whole lot. It tells you how these young kids are being indoctrinated into this new religion. Now, again, I'm not suggesting you should leave the water running or leave the lights on when you don't need them. I am suggesting that in a world where guilt concerning our sin is denied, guilt concerning something else is going to appear. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Are you noticing this kind of parallel between a lot of environmentalism and, well, religious faith, religious beliefs, religious practices? It's a good topic for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Let's take it apart and put it back together. Let's figure out what's going on here. If nothing else, this is a reminder. We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. This is a reminder that God made us in His image to seek Him. And what we have in idolatry is what happens in a fallen world when we try to seek Him and do not find Him. The number is 877-893-8255. Right back with your calls on the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about the new religion of green, a really fascinating issue. You know, the article that sparked this is not the first to suggest that environmentalism has become a substitute religion for many. That's well documented out there. But I don't think anyone's caught it quite as well as Professor Stephen T. Asma. He teaches philosophy at Columbia College in Chicago. He sees the green guilt that many secular types suffer as evidence that there's a new secular religion out there. Now, Professor Asma, is not writing as a believing Christian, but rather he's the author of a book, Why I Am a Buddhist. He's writing from a rather secular perspective himself, at least in terms of the analysis in this article. But what he has to say is really well said. And it is important, I think, that Christians understand that this is just further evidence of the fact that the people around us are more religious than they appear. Now, one of the things that we as evangelicals learn is that the word religion is loaded. You know, I can still remember a lot of people saying, I'm not religious, I'm a Christian. Well, there's a sincere statement there that means religion is basically being understood there as what we try to do to prove our own righteousness, of the works we try to do. And that's just another form of human sin working its way out. We not only are sinners, we're sinners so determined to solve our own problem that we'll make a religion out of whatever we do and try to suggest that it's the way of our rescue. Biblical Christianity is not about what we do, but what God has done for us in Christ. And what God did for us in Christ was to save us from our sins so that we are justified by faith alone, not by anything that we can do. But, you know, that being said, even biblical Christianity has certain elements that are undeniably religious. First of all, belief in God. I mean, we're making the audacious claim that we know the one true and living God. And certain responsibilities of discipleship and faithfulness and certain practices such as worship, preaching, singing songs and hymns and spiritual songs. All the things that we do that would mean that to the average man or woman on the street, a believing Christian is very religious. So let's just understand, we're not talking about religion here in the specifically evangelical sense. We're talking about religion just in terms of what people do to demonstrate that they know they are small and the world is large, and that they are seeking to understand meaning in this life. And by that standard, even atheists are religious, even when they say they're not. And when it comes to religion, it's fascinating how people do this. Remember that idolatry is nothing more than religion. That's what people are doing. It is nothing more than religion that is directed at the wrong object, which means that according to the biblical worldview, anything other than the knowledge of God that comes through Jesus Christ is a form of idolatry. That's a tough statement, but that's a very clear biblical claim. So that means there are, well, not only religious forms of idolatry, there are supposedly secular forms of idolatry, and environmentalism turns out to be tailor-made for this. People who no longer believe in God still believe in the earth. People who no longer believe in sin still believe in the sins of pollution. And they're not worried about fornication and adultery and the list of things that are found in the scriptures. They're not worried about the Ten Commandments, but they have their own new Ten Commandments about recycling and using paper rather than plastic and all the rest. And again, we are not suggesting that there is nothing to be learned from that, that we have no responsibility there. It is to suggest that that is a very poor substitute for biblical Christianity. It doesn't save. And it becomes, like every form of idolatry, a delusion. Professor Asma, writing this article, really gets to the heart of it by talking about the fact that secular people just aren't as secular as they appear. And it turns out that they do have the need to deal with the guilt that they feel. They do have the need to acknowledge that they feel responsibility in this life. They do have the need to come up with things that they believe that they ought to do as a way of rescue. They have their own doctrine of redemption that has to do with recycling and reducing carbon emissions and all the rest. Now, as I said as we were last speaking to this, This ought to come as no surprise to a Christian, because the Bible tells us that God made us in His image. And as He made us in His image, He made us with the innate knowledge that we are created by a Creator who will judge us and is watching us. He has implanted within us conscience. Different figures throughout Christian history have come up with their own way to describe this. John Calvin put it this way. He said there's a semenos religionis. In other words, there is a seed of the knowledge of God within every single human being. And if it does not grow up by God's grace and revelation into the gospel, it'll grow up into some form of idolatry. Augustine, the great bishop of the church in the 4th century, put it this way. He said, "My heart has found no rest until it finds its rest in Thee." We're surrounded by restless hearts, many of whom are trying to find rest in the new secular religion of environmentalism. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about environmentalism as the new religion of many secular folk who turn out not to be so secular as they think. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Kristen's on the line, listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Kristen.
Yes, hi. It's a great program. As you were talking, it just reminds me of Romans 1, where Paul talks about in our depravity we begin to worship the creation instead of the Creator. And I just wonder what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I was hoping someone would direct us exactly there, because that's the classic text, Kristen. You're exactly right about what happens. It turns out that we do suppress the truth in unrighteousness as human beings, as sinners. We do not see what is there. Paul says that embedded within creation, both in terms of the external world and in terms of the interior conscience, is the knowledge of God, to the extent that even His power, His invisible attributes are clearly seen. And Paul says for that reason, there is no one who has an excuse to say, "I did not know God." But what happens in our fallenness and our sinfulness is that we corrupt the knowledge of the incorruptible God. We exchange the glory of God for a lie. And we become idolaters. And that's exactly what this new secular religion is all about. That's not to say that all environmentalism is idolatry. That's not the point. That would be an overstatement. It is to say that when environmentalism becomes a worldview, a way of life, when it becomes a substitute for belief in God, when the preservation of the earth becomes the great goal rather than a faithful following and worship of the one true and living God, when indeed the doctrine of redemption becomes carbon emission cutting, when sin becomes nothing more than just green guilt, then we have a major problem here. But it's just exactly what Paul was talking about in Romans chapter 1. I mentioned Calvin, you know, on this, talking about the seed of religion, every single human being made in the image of God, having the seed of religion, which turns out to be an innate belief in the existence of a creating God, an obligating God. And as Calvin said, what people in their fallenness do, it's exactly what Paul said. They corrupt the knowledge of God. They exchange the truth of God for a lie. Calvin says they become, well, idol-making factories, every single human heart, an idol-making factory. And that's exactly what we have there. And, of course, in Romans chapter 1, Christian, you're exactly right. Paul is so clear about the fact that sometimes this becomes the worship of creation itself. Rather than worshiping the Creator, we worship the creature and the creation. And that just tells us that even though this particular variant of environmentalism is the new secular religion, maybe new, the pattern is very, very old. Thanks so much for your call, Kristen. Really appreciate that. Excellent point. Let's go to Kyle calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Mueller. I wanted to talk about how one of the most disturbing trends of this ecological religion, as you put it, is the effect that it's having on the younger generations. I'm actually a youth pastor, and I've had my own youth scold me for, you know, throwing plastic bottles into the trash and things of that nature, going as far as to dig through the trash to get them out and scolding me for it. And I've even had one tell me, and she was a very committed Christian, you know, that she was never planning on having any kids because of, you know, the indoctrination that it would be bad on the environment.
That's just heartbreaking, Kyle. I really appreciate the testimony. I hope a lot of parents are hearing that. You know, the anecdote with which Professor Asma begins his article is of his six-year-old boy chastising him for letting the water run, and he yells out to his dad, "Don't you love the earth?" Well, you know, I hope your kids, and I'm sure they do, Kyle, know that you do love the Creator, and because you love God, you do feel a sense of stewardship responsibility. You accept a sense of stewardship responsibility to the earth, and if indeed recycling will be to the glory of God, then we need to do it. The problem is, just what you reflect on here, there are an awful lot of young people who are just imbibing all the wrong parts of this environmentalism. You know, and let's face it, there's an awful lot of this ideology that's directed especially to children and also to teenagers through the school system and also through the media, through popular culture, through music and art and movie figures and all the rest. You know, when you start talking about your youth chastising you in that way, I'm not so concerned that they do that, Kyle. I'm just concerned with what they're not doing. In other words, they're more concerned with that kind of, well, put quotation marks around this, sin, rather than the sins that are much more difficult for them to address, but are much more urgent right in front of them. You know, the recycling thing is not unimportant. There's nothing like that that is not without its moral ramifications. But when it comes to those other sins, whether it's consumerism and materialism or sins of covetousness or lust or sex or pornography, you know, my guess is an awful lot of this becomes exactly what Professor Asma suggests, and that's a new religion is a way of not dealing with those other things. And by the way, Professor Asma celebrates that. I'm not even mentioning some of the things he mentions in his article because of the nature of this radio program. But he even celebrates that we're kind of over a lot of sexual guilt, according to the way he reads the secular culture. But in the aftermath of letting that go among the secular elites, along comes environmentalism and environmental sins to take their place. Kyle, God bless you as a youth pastor. Continue to preach the gospel, ground them in the truth. And, you know, I would just suggest to you that, you know, our motivation here is not to dampen their concern for the stewardship of the earth, but it is to try to help them put that into the context of a biblical worldview. And that's tough in this particular age. You got a big challenge. Praying for you should do it. Let's go to Doug calling from Sellersburg, Indiana, listening to WFIA. Go ahead, Doug.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thanks for taking my call. My comment is with regard to the environmentalist who decides that it is his responsibility to take care of the planet. And by so doing, he denies the sovereignty of God and God's ability to maintain the planet as he has promised that it will be maintained. He made a covenant with Noah in Genesis 8:22, promising that as long as the world would be here, there would be the planet would effectively be taken care of. There are additional scriptures to support that. But the sovereignty of God is what is under assault. In my mind, when you decide as an environmentalist, you have both the right and the responsibility to protect the planet.
You know, Doug, very helpful word there. A Christian affirmation of our stewardship means that we do have a role. Even as God made us in his image, he made us as responsible creatures, and he commands that we obey him. He has invested in us this stewardship of life, of possessions, of work, and, of course, of the earth as well. But we are not in charge of this thing. We can neither destroy it in the end nor preserve it by our own power. Doug, you're exactly right. The one true and living God who is sovereign over all things, the one who created all that is by the power of his word, is the one who even now is sustaining it by his providential and sovereign power. He's holding every atom and molecule of the universe together. And in the end, every atom and molecule ever created will bring him glory in the way that he determines it shall. In the meantime, we have a responsibility, but you're exactly right. We do not have sovereignty. That's just a form of the idolatry as well. Back with more. I'm Albert Mueller. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We should be thankful for every bit of analysis that helps us to understand the human condition. And what's really interesting is when you get an article like this by Professor Stephen Asma, and he's writing here from a very different viewpoint, Columbia College, Chicago. He's writing from a secular viewpoint, perhaps even in terms of a philosophy, kind of a Buddhist viewpoint. But what he has to say here in terms of his diagnosis of the modern new secular religion of environmentalism is exactly what you find in Romans chapter 1. It is exactly what you find in the idolatry that is portrayed in Scripture, the worship of creation rather than the Creator. In Isaiah chapter 44, the prophet writes about a man who cuts down a tree, and he cuts the tree then in half. With half of the tree, he does what you would do with a tree. He creates a fire and warms himself by it. He bakes bread on it. He roasts a roast on it. But with the other half of the tree, he carves it into an idol, and then he bows down to it and says, "Thou art my God." And the great prophet Isaiah says, "He feeds on ashes, and he worships a lie." Now, the reality is that I want to be very clear. We're not saying that Christians are those who suggest we have no responsibility toward the earth. No. We've talked many times on this program, and we'll continue to talk on this program, about why we as Christians have a stewardship responsibility when it comes to the planet, the cosmos, and our place within it. Now, that puts it in a different prospect, a different context than those who worship the earth, or for that matter, those who would simply destroy the earth. It puts us in a position of knowing that we're going to give an answer for how we care for this garden in which we live, but we do not worship the garden, we worship the Creator. And that's a very crucial distinction. But what Professor Asma helps us to understand is that there are so many people in this modern secular world who are nowhere near as secular as they think they are. And their lack of, secularity comes out in the fact that they still feel guilt. And I'm fascinated with the fact that he zeroes in on guilt. And even though he takes it that far, talking about how these modern people transform their feelings of guilt into the sins of recycling or failing to recycle and running their water and wasting and keeping the lights burning, the reality is that that guilt is implanted in us as a gift, folks. That gift of guilt reminds us of our need for a Savior. We will not be saved by recycling. We will only be redeemed by the blood of the Lamb as we come by faith to trust and believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. What we need, the most fundamental human need, is not to reconnect with creation. It is to be restored to a relationship with our Creator. That happens through Christ by faith. And that's the difference between the gospel and everything else. Back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'll meet you then on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.